Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Alexandra Wishart for Romadska Radio in Kyiv. We're bringing you a feature interview, followed by some new music. In this interview, our host Bogdan Nihailo talks to veteran journalist Brian Bonner about the presidential race in Ukraine, as they look at the results of the first round of voting and focus on the battle for the second round.
Obvious, given what's been happening in Ukraine, we'll be looking at the elections and the aftermath and where we stand. And I'm very happy to have as my guest the chief editor of the Kyiv Post and a long-term Ukraine watcher. That's Brian Bonner. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, good to be here, Bogdan.
Well, the obvious questions. I suppose most people know the results. Zelensky, 30-ish, 30% of the vote. Poroshenko around 17. Tymoshenko barely 13. And many others far behind, apart from maybe Boyko with 10, 11 or so. So the significance of it all, now that the dust is settling, what's your take on what actually happened on Sunday? What did those results tell us?
Well, the results tell us that Ukrainians don't like to reelect their presidents. Only one has been reelected, Leonid Kuchma, and he had to cheat to get that done, or had to apply a lot of pressure to get that done in 1999. Obviously, this is a big vote for change. It's a big vote for disappointment in President Petro Poroshenko's first term, even though the president has obviously had some big, significant achievements, objective achievements in his first 5 years, led the nation's war, defense against Russia's war. And I wouldn't count him out completely at this stage.
He's still got state resources, huge, and he can obviously manipulate symbols and come across as Ukraine's defender. Hasn't one of the weaknesses of Zelensky's approach been that he hasn't given the content, he hasn't given a program yet? So the supporters of Poroshenko have been saying, don't vote for Zelensky because you're buying a cat in a sack, basically. That's the Ukrainian expression. Something you don't know. You're buying a promise or an image, but you don't know what the substance is.
Well, I think, yes. I mean, it's amazing that he won so decisively with no real program and with his connections to, Igor Kolomoisky, the billionaire oligarch, who's definitely not a popular creature here. I wrote an op-ed online just for the sake of the journalistic intellectual exercise of five ways that Poroshenko can still win. And I have to say right up, it's going to be a very steep, steep uphill climb. Very steep uphill climb. One is clean house. I think he has to get rid of some of the unpopular, unproductive people that are seen as obstructing the corruption fight. And he can start with the prosecutors, both the prosecutor general and the special anti-prosecutor. He needs to reach out to critics. He cannot demonize people and expect them that they're going to come back to him, after he's been demonized, after they've been demonized. Here in this, I also think that he needs to reach out to the losers. One of the big surprises, I think, was Igor Shmyshko, the former SBU chief, who with very little effort got 6% of the vote and probably took it away from Gritsenko, Anatoly Gritsenko, and Yulia Tymoshenko, helping Petro Poroshenko get into the second round.
Yes, I think that Gritsenko's performance was rather disappointing, given that he represented a coalition of democratic figures, including Sadovy, the mayor of Lviv and leader of the Summer Pomage Party, and they barely got 7%. And Smyshko, coming from nowhere, a former security chief who went into politics for the first time, suddenly gets 6%.
Yeah, There are other shocking elements to this race, I think, that you see. I was surprised that Boyko, Yuri Boyko, and the cool
former regions, people,
right,
pro-Russians.
The pro-Russian people got together 15% of the vote. Obviously, Yulia Tymoshenko is out. I think Petro Poroshenko, if you remember some months ago, he was in single-digit territory. So he has risen. He has risen.
Largely by playing the on national feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
The Tomos, the language
army
issue.
Army, language, faith. And I think he's going to hammer away at Zelensky's inexperience, and he's going to hang Igor Kolomoisky around Zelensky's neck.
Now, look, is it fair to present the villain of the peace, Kolomoisky, as the Poroshenko camp is doing? We hear nothing about Akhmetov. We hear nothing about Firtash. Well, we haven't for a long time, other than them having courts reinstate their property in the last week or two, too.
Well, that explains why the president took such a drubbing in the polls. People did not see that he was doing anything to disrupt the oligarchy, fight corruption. And I think that's what people voted for. I think people want change. And right now, you know, the anger over the status quo or disappointment over the status quo is far greater than the fear of the unknown with Zelensky. Now, Zelensky has some, if he's, well, I'm going to write an op-ed about five things Zelensky should do to hold his to win. I don't think he has to do much. I think he may just run out the clock. I don't think he'll debate. I think Poroshenko wants him into that debate because Poroshenko is you know, very good at speaking. He's very good at policy. He's very persuasive.
And he's got the facts and figures in his hand, in his mind. So obviously, Zelensky would be at a clear disadvantage if he went into that.
Could be. But as you remember, Ronald Reagan also was not also that good on facts and figures, but was good on the big picture. But I don't expect. I mean, it's a typical. Unfortunately, there's no debate culture in politics here. In America, you're expected to debate often. Here, remember, Poroshenko did not want to debate Yulia Tymoshenko in 2014.
I've forgotten that. Remind us.
And has been averse to, you know, debates and confrontational or, you know.
Well, this is the great paradox about him. That he's such a good communicator abroad when he speaks in English and he speaks to the BBC or whoever else. And yet at home, he's not really been a communicator with his people.
Yes, and I think they think they're going to pull through this. I think they're hoping that Ukrainians wake up and say, "Hey, wait a minute! You know, who do you want to represent yourself, represent your nation at the world stage?" But the time is very, very short. However, if Zelensky gets in, he had better have a reform program right from the get-go. If the reformers turn out to be window dressing, he's going to have a very short honeymoon, I think, and if he gets elected. And also, I think that if I were him, I would purge or not have anybody associated with Kolomoisky in the administration, I think.
Yes, he has to prove that he's his own person, that he's not, as he's been accused of being, a puppet on somebody else's strings. But as you rightly point out, he needs to get a credible program, or at least the contours of a program, out in the next days. He doesn't even have the 3 weeks, because people have to see that he's serious about being a president.
Well, you saw, and you yourself told me about, you know, he's got ex-finance minister Alexander Deniluk, and he laid out a program that looks pretty good.
Yeah, for starters, it looks very good. I mean, what Deniluk also stressed last night, this was on Tuesday evening, he also said, look, we're interested in being a majority party in parliament. What we're doing now and what we're preparing is not just to win the election. We want to have enough seats in the new parliament that will be elected in October to be able to put through our policies and our reforms.
Yeah, and Bogdan, you hit that right. And I think that I think the president is going to get a natural following in parliament. Maybe the big winner here is Groysman, because he's going to stay probably as prime minister.
We don't know, but you see, from what I noticed, Brian, and you've probably seen that in the Poroshenko list that's been spoken about of candidates, apparently Groysman's been offered number one place.
Wow.
And we know that there was behind the scenes, well, if not friction, then shall we say a distancing of the Prime Minister from the President.
How do you think I know they're not thinking of Plan B if they get defeated, but.
Well, I think they'll just try to rally what they can for some kind of core group that's left in Parliament,
Yeah.
And live to fight another day.
And I know you've written about this, and we're both, patriots of Ukraine. We need a unified transition. Do you think that there's going to be whoever loses is going to be a good loser and can do something to unite the country?
At this stage, no. But as both candidates realize that they have to appeal to the middle ground and to win over the millions of undecided voters. And the other thing I wanted to interject in parenthesis, let's return to this, that turnout was expected to be 70 plus, reaching 80 a week or two ago. And yet on the day was, 63, 62, something like that. Why did millions of people not turn up at such a critical moment? It was nice weather in Kyiv. What kept them away?
Well, I think that goes back to the need for electoral law reform. I think the registration process has to be easier. I think those who moved, they faced some bureaucracy in re-registering and then having to re-register again. I think there were not a lot of internally displaced people who voted. I still think that voting procedures for Ukrainians who live abroad could be easier. So there is that. And of course, there is that, you talk to more people than I do. People were very unhappy with the choices. But I really sense this feeling. They're unhappy with the choices, but the Ukrainians don't like to entrench power. They don't like dynasties. They don't like 5 years of the same person.
Authoritarian rule, yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody dominant. It's what we call the Hetman syndrome. No one is more important than me. If there are two Ukrainians, the three Hetmans. But I think that's also a reflection of this individualism that borders on anarchy here in Ukraine, in our history. Cossacks, Makhno, and everybody else. But let's also look ahead now. So the dust is settling, as I say. Both teams are catching their breath and trying to come up with the most effective strategy. What do you think Poroshenko will do? You've said what you think he should do. What do you think he can actually do in the 2 weeks that are left?
Well, I think in the 2 weeks that are left, well, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of black PR ops. I'm not sure how much it will stick. I think he does have to take some decisive moves in getting rid of some people who have been obstructing the corruption fight. I think he has to signal that he's going to really fight corruption if he gets back in. And I think that that requires him to name some people. I think that he's going to have to appeal to at least not, if not the losers, but their programs. Maybe he can find some ways to appeal to their programs. And I think, he has to. I mean, hopefully it's going to be honest and clean. We had a good, honest, clean first round. I think that's more or less. Yes, it's true. Yulia Tymoshenko wouldn't agree, but I don't think he needed to apply a lot of pressure. And plus, it was a very intensely observed election. So he needs to do it all democratically. He's got a very short time.
You noticed that when he was watching the exit polls, he acknowledged that he had heard the signal, or the disappointment in the protest, and then he made that statement of "I hear you, young people." What can he offer at this stage to placate and win over the younger voters that have gone for an unknown quantity, but who is younger and offering change?
That's going to be a difficult sell with the young people, but I think he's going to project himself as a statesman. Going to continue to project himself as a statesman, as the one who can speak English, who can hold his own with anybody, as the one who's not, I think he's going to probably try to tag his opponent as pro-Russian, even though Zelensky's obviously said that he's not going to make any concessions in that area. So, but he's running out of time. He's got to do a lot in a hurry to change a lot of people's minds.
And yet Zelensky doesn't have to do so much. Come out with some basic points about policy and direction forward and not put, make mistakes, not say the wrong things.
I'd be very surprised if he came out with an activist program. I mean, I think if he can, in this next 2 weeks, I think he's got the lead. And it's very hard to see how, like, where do you think the Boyko Vilko voters will go?
Well, I think part of them, partly, some of them won't vote, obviously. That will be discussed, that they got a relatively poor showing. Some will vote for Zelensky. And some will, I don't know.
I mean, what is it? I mean, Poroshenko has to win over 60% of the, you know, the other voters to even have a chance.
But you notice in the east, the Lugansk and Donetsk regions voted for Boyko and Vilko, and they've remained despite all the effort that's been invested in winning back the mentalities of these regions. They voted for the pro-Russian candidates, yeah. Which is also worrying. Whoever comes in is going to have a huge task, not only on the economic front, social front, reform, but even, in terms of keeping the unity of the country together.
What do you think the legacy, if this is it, of Petro Poroshenko is? I mean, he did have outstanding achievements, led the nation's defense against the war, secured visa-free travel, signed an historic economic agreement with the European Union, won independence of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. What happened?
I think he made a very good start, but I think he let the side down by being torn between the business of being a businessman and in primus inter pares amongst the oligarchs who had more or less agreed to him taking power, taking the pieces of the pie away from the Yanukovych clans, and his role, the expected role as a statesman, as a national leader. He said much of what was expected of him, but it seems that behind the scenes he gave preference to the balance of interests in the status quo, the economic status quo, keeping the structures that exist.
Which is not what Ukrainians want.
Not after the Revolution of Dignity. And then it's been very difficult for him, even though he played the on the national card, a national feeling, and things like the Tomos, getting independence for the Ukrainian Orthodox Church from Moscow, are very important. But why didn't he start that 3 years ago?
Yes.
Why bring in a bill that is very important for Ukrainians, but potentially divisive at a time of elections, into the parliament on the eve of the elections? And it was blocked, showing how difficult all of this is.
Yes.
And today somebody commented, because the deputy speaker, pro-Poroshenko, Herashchenko, said, well, we'll get parliament to force them to debate. I'm going to introduce a bill to make it mandatory for the two remaining candidates to have a debate. And another MP, woman MP, replied to, but it's not going to work. You don't have time. It has to go through the preparatory commission. But more importantly, it's not fair because you've put so much emphasis on the language law. And now suddenly for political interest, something else takes precedence. And you want to put that on the back burner because it suits somebody up at the top. So not all simple. But OK, as we approach the final minutes, I think one thing that I'd like to ask you about is, clearly, this was a victory for democracy. It was a victory in the sense that the elections happened. But it was also a victory for affirming Ukraine's Western orientation. The surprisingly, perhaps, the election was not about going back to Russia or the war stopping at any cost, though this issue was manipulated. So it really was about internal matters, about how the country should be managed.
It was, and I agree. I think that the debate over the foreign policy course is settled. It's pro-European Union, it's pro-NATO, it's pro-democracy.
Yeah.
And now the issue is they want people to not just talk about it, but to they want their leaders to undertake the real steps and changes, because of they want an end to the oligarchy privileges. It's not about throwing people in jail anymore. I don't think that's possible, and I don't even think that's probably wise at this point. It is about ending the privileges going forward, and even there we have resistance now. So, but you're right about the election. It was really done in a civil way. I don't know that we can say that we have any country, even my own America, has a true democracy. But we have, as many people have said, an oligarchic pluralism. There isn't just one dominant authoritarian interest. There are competing interests and an active civil society pushing forward. So I think that we are a triumph in democracy, and we are a golden beacon, certainly compared to some of our neighbors, Belarus, Russia, and most of the Soviet Union.
Let's just finish off with Russia. I mean, surely this is a huge blow for Putin, because with a Russian-speaking candidate winning the first round so convincingly, what does this say as regards the justification that Putin has used to intervene in Ukrainian affairs, seize its territory, etc.?
Done, finished, gone. I mean, the only danger I see is that, as I said, like Boyko, Vilko, I was a little bit surprised and disappointed that they had gotten that many. It shows how many people still feel disaffected in those areas. The encouraging sign, I think, in terms of national unity, is that Zelensky was able to do pretty well.
And get a lot of the votes that would otherwise have gone. Do you think if he's successful, long shot, a Russophone president who will switch to Ukrainian, of course, but who appeals and protects the interests of the Russian speakers. If he does well, will that win over some of those who are still pro-Russian, do you think?
I think he's got a—yes, but I also think we have to make big economic improvements. And I don't envy the next president. I think it's going to be a huge challenge. I think the vested interests are going to be very strong. But I think that's going to be the decisive, very decisive in how people view him. I think he's got to show obvious achievements before the October parliamentary elections. And you know, if Poroshenko and the Narodny Front of Yatsenyuk, the former prime minister, and Yulia Tymoshenko play a constructive role, I still believe that there can be progress, because Ukrainians have said we cannot go on like this with the economy at such a low level, growing at such a slow pace.
Finally, any last thoughts you'd want to share, advice to journalists who are covering the election, maybe listening outside, who are not necessarily based in Ukraine?
I think Zelensky was an awakening to people outside, and I didn't watch him, but he's a very familiar face to Ukrainians for the last 20 years on TV. He's not just out of nowhere. And Servant of the People is brilliant satire. He understands what's wrong with this country and how what's wrong with how it runs. I, hope that he's genuine, and I hope that the reformers come. But I think that, if you're betting now, the odds are there's going to be a change. But the journalists outside should know that, we've written this many times before, Ukraine is going to survive this. Ukraine has survived so much worse. And when Ukraine is under attack, it's when Ukrainians and their friends, foreign friends, like, I consider myself one, will rally to the cause. So hopefully he can appeal to this patriotism that Ukrainians feel and that their friends abroad feel. And, journalists should give Zelensky a fresh look if he becomes president. But, it'll become pretty clear whether he's going in the right direction by the people he surrounds himself with. And we also shouldn't hesitate to be critical if and I don't think Ukrainians will hesitate to be critical if they see him going the wrong direction.
Right. Thank you very much. Well, I've been talking to Brian Bonner, the chief editor of the Kyiv Post. Thanks so much, Brian, for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thanks for the time.
There's a legendary keyboard player who lives in Lviv called Arkady Orekhov. He and his friends, the Jigga Jazz Quintet, recently released a new album called Life, Naživo. Here he is improving some tunes you may recognize. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Next week, we will be bringing you another topical interview with our host Bogdan Nehajlo. So be sure to tune in for a new episode. And we'd love to hear from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@romatskaradio.org. I'm Alexandra Wyszard for Romatska Radio in Kyiv. Thank you so much for listening.